Jackson fakes it to pass in zone. Yes, touchdown to Greg Olsen. Wilson just got it away. There's Keith Lee. Touchdown, Carolina.
Hello, welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. Oh, what?
No, to say hey, you said hello.
Oh, well, hello. Hello and welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is Brian, joined by John as always. This is your 2023 edition of the Keep Sounding Podcast. We were off for a little bit for the holidays, and last week I was sick, so we couldn't really get together for a show. But here we are, end of the season. Panthers did not make the playoffs. Shocker, I know. So we're right in the middle of the head coaching search, as Matt Rhule was fired very early on in the season. And we're here to break it down for you and get the new year kicked off. So, John, how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing pretty good, you know, just new transitioning, like our frame of reference for football now, right?
No more football. No more football for the Panthers, at least. Yeah. Now we get to watch good football.
It's everybody's favorite time of year, the off season.
Yeah, the off season where you can win the Super Bowl, you can draft a whole bunch of blue chip players and get like 8 starters in the draft. You can sign a bunch of free agents for really cheap, and they'll still be really, really good and not have to pay out any dollars. And if you pay out any dollars to them, then you're mad because they shouldn't be making that kind of money.
Right.
That's the off season for you.
We're going to sign several players, of which we'll hate half of because they don't perform to their contract.
Right. We're going to trade for Derek Carr though, John, and we're going to get him for like $500,000 a year.
I did see, we'll talk about that later, but I did see like a thing where it's like the Panthers could trade for Derek Carr, and it's just like, can we stop doing that?
Anyway. We could see it happening. But anyway, so just to recap the end of the season from the last time we had a show, and again, the holidays and me being sick caused us to not be able to have one for a bit, but the Panthers lost to the Steelers in Carolina, I believe. Yes, yeah. And 24-16, the Panthers got pretty thoroughly dominated in that game.
I vaguely remember that game because it was so boring.
Yeah, it was really terrible. Like, it was two teams that have kind of the same philosophy, except the Steelers have Kenny Pickett, who actually looks like he might be good, along with a pretty good defense, and it just was a thrashing. Like, I don't think the score really reflects how badly the Panthers were dominated in that game. It was just embarrassing. Like, I was not having fun watching that game. But...
Well, and okay. I think just from like we're not neutral, but like even from just like a football perspective, like obviously everybody has their own taste in like their favorite flavor of football. But like when the Steelers just kept having these like long drives that would gain, and then the Panthers even too a little bit, it was either like a 3-and-out or these drives that were just like 4 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards. And it's just like, man, nothing's happening. Like, there's no turnovers. It's all just like punts and 4 yard gains. And like the Steelers came out in the second half and had a 21 play, 91 yard drive that took almost 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, almost
the
entire third
insane.
Quarter was basically the entire third quarter was one Steelers drive. And I'm like, this is boring.
Yeah. Not the kind of football you're looking for as just from an entertainment perspective. I mean, I know there are people. I personally do enjoy that defensive slugfest, that like 13-6, you know, struggle to score points. But that really wasn't what that game was. It was more so just long, methodical drives.
Right, because like the defensive slugfest, the thing with like football that makes it entertaining is when like stuff happens. Which, so you can have a defensive slugfest where, like, there's sacks and there's turnovers and there's, like, dominating defensive performances. Like, that game was boring just because it was, like, nothing happening.
Yeah, and
like,
even
it just felt like very few drives in general.
Even with the defensive slugfest performances, every score is almost magnified. Like, that 2013 game with the 49ers and the Panthers where D'Angelo Williams scored the only touchdown of the game, like, that touchdown was super fucking exciting.
Yeah.
So, You know, but yeah, the Panthers lost that game. It looked like they were probably on their way out of the playoff picture. And then they turned around the following Saturday, Christmas Eve, and they beat the fuck out of the Lions. Over 500.
Yeah, it really came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. I mean, I know the Lions' defense isn't good, but like that team is kind of just one of those scrappy teams that's well-coached. And yeah, the Panthers ran for like 500, or the Panthers had a total of 500 yards against them. They ran for a franchise record as well, which I never would have expected with Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard as the primary running backs. Like just thoroughly dominating. I believe in the first half they had like 200 yards rushing or something like that.
Yeah, they crossed 200 like right there. And it was like watching that game was like kind of the opposite of the Steelers game, where it's just like, why is this so easy? Like, why isn't it always this easy?
Yeah.
Like, they're just like ripping off 40 yard runs like over and over and over again. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, that was really the game where it was like, okay, Chuba Hubbard could actually be a really good player in the NFL. Like, or at least a decent like RB2 or something like that. Like that, I know that Panthers fans have very much maligned him since he was drafted by Matt Rhule, of course, because, you know, his wife told him to draft him. But that was a good game for Chuba Hubbard. Obviously, Deontay Foreman as well. Very much fit the Steve Wilkes / Ron Rivera style of just run the ball down their fucking throats until until they can't really defend it. But even then, the Lions adjusted in the second half and didn't allow as much rushing yards until like really towards the end of the fourth quarter. Overall, just a very good team win. It put Carolina back in the conversation to be in the playoffs, and they had a must-win game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the following week. And man, that game was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was funny too, because like I finally pivoted from like, okay, whatever, just make the playoffs, it's fun. As opposed to like, I don't know if these like wins are good long term, but whatever. Like, happy to have watchable football on Sundays. And then of course, like my most invested game of the season, the Panthers took like commanding lead in the fourth quarter, and I'm like, oh, we're gonna do this, and then we're just like, the Buccaneers figured out they can just have Mike Evans run a straight line and throw touchdown passes.
Which, for context, if any of you out there don't necessarily know, J.C. Horn broke his wrist against the Lions late in the game. So that meant that C.J. Henderson and Keith Anderson were the... Keith Taylor, that's right. Keith Taylor were the two starting corners, and that was not a recipe for success against Mike Evans and Tom Brady. So despite the Buccaneers' struggles, they, you know, lost. So
kind of like the arrival point of the Buccaneers. I mean, they didn't play against Atlanta, so they didn't have a chance to show if that carried over at all. But it felt like I think most of the rest of the league was like, oh, Tom Brady and Mike Evans. Tom Brady's figured it out. Here he comes. Because, you know, two bombs to Mike Evans and a rushing touchdown just in the fourth quarter, like a quarterback sneak.
Oh, Mike Evans had three touchdowns, I believe.
Well, no, just in the fourth quarter. He had
two. Yeah, that was rough. Quarter. Yeah.
But what was really cool, too, is the highlights of, like, oh, they're all the exact same play, like, just run straight up the field on the right side and then toast C.J. Henderson or Keith Taylor.
Yeah. And that was the week also that we didn't get a chance to cover, but Josh Norman returned to Carolina that week. He only played like one snap against the Buccaneers, but it was cool just to have Josh Norman back. I mean, it's kind of like the Cam Newton situation where he kind of like left on unceremonious terms and came back, and it kind of like, I don't know, righted the narrative a little bit, but Panthers lost. They were officially eliminated from the playoffs, so they had their meaningless game against the Saints at the end of the year. That seems to be a trend. And
did that look like a meaningless game.
Yeah, that was a that was a rough game to watch. I, as you all probably know, but if you don't, I usually live tweet the games and share on Facebook what's going on. And that was a really rough one to watch and try and cover. The Panthers ended up winning 10-7. And the only score for the Panthers that wasn't a field goal was a fumble by Sam Darnold at the goal line. The second time he did this season, where it turned into a touchdown as Michael Jordan, the much maligned guard, scored the touchdown. And the Saints really had every chance to win that game and put it away. They missed field goals. They had field goals blocked. They had turnovers. In the end, though, it came down to an Eddie Pinheiro field goal in a dome, which was never really a good recipe for success, as he's generally struggled in those situations. But no, he made the game-winning field goal. The Panthers won a meaningless game to end the season, 10-7.
Yay.
Which means that they will now draft at 9th overall in the 2023 NFL draft, which, fun fact, the last time and the only time the Panthers have had the 9th overall pick, they drafted Luke Kuechly. So I'd be really happy if they find another Luke Kuechly at number 9, not going to lie.
Wouldn't be bad. Anyone that's like, if there's any frustration or if there's any consolation to, like, winning the meaningless game in week 18, I think the Panthers probably would have still only picked 8th anyway. Like,
it didn't impact their draft stock all that much. And it ended with Steve Wilks. He ended the season, 6-6, I want to say, as a coach, which is pretty good because, you know, he won more games as an interim head coach with a coaching staff he didn't pick and personnel he didn't draft than Matt Rhule has ever won as a Panthers head coach in a season.
I mean, I wrote that in the Steve Wilks kind of like quick look at thing. Like, he, you know, 500 doesn't seem great, but it's pretty good when it's compared to, I think it was like 11-27 before that. So
yeah, I think Matt Rhule only won one game this year, too.
Yeah, it was one. He was, yeah. They're 1-4. Panthers 1-4 when Steve Wilks took over.
Yep. So solid audition for Steve Wilks. So now the Panthers look to the off season where they are doing their head coaching search. They also are probably doing a quarterback search, as I imagine Sam Darnold, while he played very well towards the end of the season, 43 yards against the Saints as a passer, doesn't necessarily give you any faith that he is the answer at quarterback. So the Panthers are currently in what I would call probably the most exciting part of the offseason, where we get to speculate on who the next head coach is going to be and who the next quarterback is going to be. So,
yeah, they've been very thorough with their head coaching search. I did want to say before we get into that, very funny stat line that, and we'll talk about this more in like my concerns and Steve Wilks, but the Panthers ran the ball 41 times against the Saints, and Sam Darnold we dropped back 17 times. And it was very funny. There was one point Matt Millen said on the broadcast, and I feel bad. I don't know. Matt Millen seems like he's like a nice enough dude, so I feel bad that he's like that. I like want to make fun of the things he says all the time. But he said at one point, like, Sam Darnold's like quietly had a very efficient game passing, and at that point, Sam Darnold was like 4-for-11 for 22 yards and an interception.
Yeah,
like, I specifically remember that was his exact stat line when Matt Millen said he's had a sneaky efficient game, and it's like, Matt, I don't think you can be any less efficient than Sam Darnold's been.
It's very funny too, because against the Buccaneers, I would say Darnold had his best game of the season. He threw some really good passes in that game. Obviously, he kind of fell off towards the end, threw a couple picks, but. Yeah, that Saints game was very ugly. That was very much the offensive line obviously suffered two starting injuries between Austin Corbett and Brady Christensen as their two starting guards. So that didn't help as far as sacks and whatnot. But yeah, Darnold kind of very much looked like the quarterback from the season before last season, where he just didn't look good and looked lost out there. So I guess that's the hot and cold we're going to get from Darnold. Wouldn't be opposed to him coming back as a backup quarterback, though, because, you know, the Panthers only have Matt Corral under contract this year.
Or if they draft somebody and they're
which
like,
they could do.
Yeah, which, yeah, if they, and they're like, who's the, we need a veteran, you know, locker room type of thing. It might be awkward to make Sam Darnold do that since he's been here a couple of years now, but I think he's fine to just kind of have. I don't think, like, they should hopefully be smart enough to not consider him the long-term option. But no, like, he's not bad to have around.
No, and he very much seems to be the kind of player where he's absolutely fine with going into a competition and losing if the other player is better. I mean, it happened with Baker Mayfield. I mean, he very much could have just like locked it down for the rest of the year, and they could have just started whatever practice squad quarterback they had. But no, Darnold came out and played very well and just took advantage of the opportunity presented to him. So, yeah, I very much would not be opposed to having Darnold come in on like a veteran cheap quarterback deal just to be there as a starter in case the rookie's not ready, especially since they're picking at ninth. So they could very much grab a project quarterback or even grab a quarterback in the second round. So, yeah. Right.
Yep. All right. I guess since we're talking about quarterbacks, like, do you like anyone in the draft, or do you want to go the like Derek Carr route?
It's tough for me because I feel like the first overall pick is going to be a quarterback. I think the Bears are just going to trade back because they need to assemble assets around Justin Fields. So I think that first pick is definitely going to be one of the top two quarterbacks. Between the ninth pick and the first pick, I could totally see another team taking quarterback. And from what I'm registering, it seems like the UK quarterback, what's his face?
Will Levis.
Yeah, Will Levis seems to be in play around where the Panthers pick. So maybe him. I mean, if they're going to take a shot on a quarterback, I would prefer they go for the high upside guys. And I don't know if Will Levis is that. But again, if they bring Sam Darnold back, especially if they retain someone like Steve Wilks as their head coach, then you have a little bit of a familiar situation there while the quarterback gets itself ready. I personally would not be opposed to them trading for Derek Carr. I know that he's been a little bit maligned, but I mean, he's been good in his career and he would be behind a pretty good offensive line. I mean, the only offensive lineman they don't have under contract for next year is Bradley Bozeman. And I feel like they can get him back. If not, you know, they still have some other players that they can play there or sign. So I would not be opposed to Derek Carr. I don't know what you think about that. I mean, I know his contract.
I would be very much
crazy.
Opposed to Derek Carr.
Why is that?
Because it's just like, why? Like, he's fine. He's not bad. But like, I don't know if the Hornets on TV, if the Panthers were closer to competing and like a quarterback, they needed a quarterback to like fill out an otherwise like really complete roster, which they're not like that far away from it. But if they were better, I would be more on board with it. But they just need to stop doing that. I think like, I think about a team like the Jets or who's another team that's like having struggles with like a young quarterback, or like the Patriots or something that like recently took a young quarterback that they're not like totally sold on, but they're not ready to compete with yet. Like that makes more sense to me. But like the Panthers have done this like carousel of like bringing in retreads that are not working out and then expecting them to be better here. And I know Derek Carr has proven a whole lot more than Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, but it's just kind of like, you can only, I don't want to be the Colts with like Phillip Rivers and then Carson Wentz and then Matt Ryan. Just like, get your own guy.
But I feel like Derek Carr is a little bit of a different situation from those three. Phillip Rivers was going to retire, you know, that year. It was pretty much a guarantee. I think anybody who objectively looked at that signing thought he'd be there for like 2 or 3 years was probably crazy. Carson Wentz was a broken quarterback in Philadelphia, so that was very much a rehab project. And Matt Ryan was like 37 this year. Mm. So I don't feel like Derek Carr is in that same situation. The other factor is the Panthers showed enough flashes to me that I feel like they could be competitive sooner rather than later with the right moves. So I think like, and Derek Carr is not going to cost more than like maybe a mid-round pick at best just because of his contract. So I think, you know, you get Derek Carr, you use that first round pick, you use those two second round, they have 2 second round picks, I believe.
The 49ers should.
Yeah. On players to surround him, especially like maybe an edge rusher to go opposite Brian Burns, maybe a corner, another wide receiver. And I think they could be right there in the running, especially since the NFC South is terrible and Tom Brady is not going to be back next year. I would bet money that Tom Brady is not returning to the Buccaneers next year.
Yeah, I mean, but then that still feels like a 1 year thing. Like, where does Derek Carr rank as like active quarterback, like starting NFL quarterback, if you sign him like firmly in like the middle of the pack?
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, but like
the 49ers are winning with Brock Purdy right now.
Yeah, but I don't. They don't want to be. Like, Brock Purdy's not the end game. Like, they're winning with Brock Purdy, but they're not going to be like, yeah, like we're winning with Brock Purdy. Like, they're like, they have Trey Lance, and they would like they would make sense for Derek Carr depending on Trey Lance's health.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of my thing. Is like, it feels like an upgrade for the sake of upgrading, but it's like a very low ceiling upgrade for a team that's not only like we've already failed at that twice, like we already whiffed at trying that twice. And then just from like a marketing perspective, like I don't know how much patience the fan base has for like another retread quarterback that has a seal that doesn't have like a high ceiling. And again, I know he's better than the two we have, but it's just kind of like, hey guys, remember how like the retreads that we brought in before were like not any better than we had? Like, how about one that's slightly better but is boring because he's been around forever and never won anything and doesn't move the needle for anybody from like an excitement level?
I would say markedly better than what we have, but I guess I should have prefaced it by saying that if they had a shot at CJ Stroud or Bryce Young at the ninth pick, then no, I would want them to do that. I just don't know if they do at this point.
I would much rather us try to trade up and get one of those guys than to sign Derek or trade for Derek Carr.
That's fair. I mean, there is going to be opportunity for it. I mean, you have teams like the Eagles and obviously the Texans. Well, the Texans will probably take a quarterback, but like the Bears up in the top 10. There's a good chance.
Bears are one. I think the Bears, that might be too expensive. But so what I think would be the more, I don't know, like, target, like it would be hard to get Stroud or Young unless the Bears can't get out of number one. But I don't know if like Levis, like I don't know if you can try to convince the Colts to like trade back or the Cardinals or somebody. If you can get like up to three, you can get Stroud if no one else jumps up to one. But it's tough. You might have to try to target Levis, but then I don't know where you have to get to get Levis, maybe six with the Lions, just to get ahead of the Raiders and the Falcons.
Yeah. Let me throw another scenario at you. There's been a little bit of whispers on Twitter of Justin Fields being potentially tradable.
I would like that, but I also don't think that's actually a thing. I think the Bears are just trying to increase the value of the number one pick by making teams think that a quarterback is a possibility for them.
Oh, I would 100% agree. I mean, Justin Fields definitely made strides this year. I think they'd be stupid to trade him, but at the same time, they have a new head. They have a new coaching staff coming in, basically. So it's on the table, but yeah.
I mean, I wanted us to take Justin Fields when we took J.C. Horn, so I'm obviously not going to like be against that, but I think it's like, I don't think there's any chance the Bears actually do that. I think they're entirely, any rumors suggesting that is a possibility are born out of like an attempt to pump up the value of that number one overall pick of like, well, the Bears are going to take a quarterback. So like, you know, if we target like the Cardinals, if we like Young and Stroud, you know, we only have to get as high as the Cardinals at the third pick to get our guy. And the Bears are like, no, we might take one at one and you'd have to get up to number one to get your guy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, that's all I think that is.
Yeah.
Well, especially if you're in a situation where like their quarterback's as good as his has been or there as he's been, that like it feels wasteful to like, you know, just like get on a treadmill of young quarterback and then have to like use other picks to fill out your roster.
Right. Yep. No, I get it. And the Panthers definitely assembled enough draft capital where they could move up after trading Christian McCaffrey. So,
right.
I guess the biggest factor that will go into what they're going to do at quarterback is going to be the head coach, if we want to transition into that discussion.
Yep.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Surely cast a wide net.
Yeah. So I guess the original plan was to be very, targeted with it, but they've already conducted 3 interviews and they have requested 7 more. So that's 10 interviews total for the head coaching spot. They're being very, after today's announcements where they started requesting interviews with more defensive people, it's a little more diversified, but prior to that, aside from, Jim Caldwell, Frank Reich, Steve Wilks, former head coaches, their targets very much seem to be offensive coordinators who also played quarterback in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So the current list is Steve Wilks, Frank Reich, Jim Caldwell. And then the ones that they've reportedly requested interviews with are Ken Dorsey, Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, Detroit Lions offensive coordinator, Mike Kafka, New York Giants offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, and then the 2 most recent ones are Jerod Mayo, linebackers coach for the Patriots, and D'Amico Ryans, defensive coordinator for the 49ers. I haven't really figured out what coach I'd like the most out of any of those.
Yeah. I always think it's hard to have a strong opinion on, like, who you think your team should hire as a head coach, because we don't know anything about them other than, like, the performance of the unit that they're in charge of. But that doesn't necessarily translate to head coaching ability because it's an entirely different skill set, right? Like, we just say, like, D'Amico Ryans, 49ers defensive coordinator, 49ers defense good, D'Amico Ryans, good coach. And same thing with, like, Ken Dorsey, offensive coordinator of Bills, Bills offense good, Ken Dorsey good. It's like, well, that was kind of a well-oiled machine, like for Ken Dorsey's case, like that was a well-oiled machine before he took over that role. Like, how much of it is him being like a leader and like leader of men and organizing things, and how much of it is him just like calling the plays that Brian Tabel left behind? So, but he could still be a good coach. We just don't have a way to know because we don't interview him. We don't see how he interacts with his players. We don't see how he does on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, it makes it hard for me to like feel strongly about head coach candidates, though I like the idea of like younger guys that I feel are more adaptable. That's always my, and like, it's not to be like ageist, but that's kind of like the thing that I always want to see. You know what I mean? I especially as a Panthers fan, that's other than prior to Matt Rhule, who was just kind of bad. It's just been a long time of like very old school, like we're just going to run the ball and not make mistakes and then let the ball, like the ball bounce, the bounce of the ball determine the fate of our season and, not actually like go out and get anything.
Yeah, and I understand why people are so mixed on Steve Wilks, because he's kind of an extension of Ron Rivera with a little more ballsiness.
Yeah.
And the argument again is if you get a hot offensive coordinator, they're probably going to get sniped by another team. So that's why I understand where these criticisms of getting a defensive head coach make sense. It's tough because, like, a guy like Ben Johnson, for example, he's only had one season of success in the NFL, but it's really hard to look away from the fact that he was really successful with Jared Goff and a Lions offense that really didn't look that great a year ago. So, I don't know. It's one of those things, too, where, and I know we had this discussion in Slack, but every time you talk to a fan's, like, let's say we're talking about Ben Johnson, we talk to a Lions fan. Lions fans have a whole bunch of criticisms of him because, you know, the general thing is just that if your team has an offensive or defensive coordinator, your fans hate him. It's just, it is what it is. Like, there's always something you're going to criticize about him. There's always these small gaps and things. Like, Kellen Moore was one where someone tagged me on Facebook because they saw that Kellen Moore was being interviewed by the Panthers, or at least they requested an interview, and their response was, take him.
Yeah.
It's just very interesting that that's the way it is. Like,
My point was, like, basically, people don't like when they're, like, I see this, it's funny, because, like, to tell my little anecdote, like, I text my mom a lot during Panthers games, and if I ever watch them with her, basically, she gets frustrated whenever the Panthers don't succeed, like, every single time. Like, the Panthers thoroughly dominated the Lions, and the Lions never got close, but my mom got, like, mildly frustrated in the second half because she felt like the Lions were doing too well when they were down by, like, two touchdowns. And I feel like that's not uncommon for sports fans, especially for football fans. So it's just, like, So offenses always fail because, like, if they didn't, then there's just, like, no point in playing a sport, right? Like, defenses make stops sometimes. And depending on, like, what the play call was that failed, they were dumb, right? Like, if I call, like, a run up the middle on third and three, it's like, God, why do we just run up the middle? It's so dumb. We need to be creative. But then if I, like, run a reverse on third and three, it's like, why are we getting so cute? We need to just ram it down their throats. And it's like, well, you know, if we did that and failed, that was also wrong, right? It's like a very results-driven opinion people have. And then over time, all of those failures accumulate in people's minds, and they're like, yeah, that guy actually sucks.
Yeah.
So that's why, and that's why every, and that is my, you know, my theory, or my, you know, my thesis on why every offensive and defensive coordinator actually sucks. There are no good ones.
No, I mean, it's funny because what's his name? Ben McAdoo for the Panthers. I actually felt he called plays extremely well in the last few weeks of the season, but everyone thinks he needs to kick rocks, and I don't disagree. Just so I can preface this by saying, I don't want him back, but he had a pretty good performance as a head as an offensive coordinator once he was no longer saddled with Matt Rhule and whatever bullshit he was coming up with for the offense. But yeah, it's just very much like, even like Sean McDermott, there were criticisms of him. Steve Wilkes, as defensive coordinator, there were criticisms of him, even though the Panthers defense was good when he was the defensive coordinator. The Panthers defense was a lot better than I expected this year when he was the head coach, but
yeah,
there's always going to be those criticisms. And it's just very interesting because there's always those fans that want the high upside shot at the next Sean McVay, but you could also very much get the, you know, next Cliff Kingsbury, for example.
Right.
So,
but to be fair, Cliff Kingsbury was never good anywhere. So
no, that
I don't
is
know why
true,
the car.
Yeah.
I don't know why the Cardinals thought he would be so much better in the NFL. But, now, good.
I was just say, if I'm looking at it right now, objectively, just from the high floor and potentially decent ceiling head coaching candidate, I mean, I'm still looking at Frank Reich.
Yeah, Frank Reich's, I don't think, a bad candidate. I don't know, like, the Colts situation isn't ideal. I meant to read an article. There was an article that The Athletic put out about the turmoil in the Colts organization and stuff. And so you wonder how much of it he was a victim of that, and how much of it he was a contributor to that. I wouldn't mind that. Jim Caldwell, I feel like, is successful, but I feel like that's just like rehiring John Fox and Ron Rivera, right?
Yeah, he also hasn't coached. He also hasn't been a coach for a few years.
Yeah. Even though I think he's underrated as a head coach, like I feel like people have always kind of clowned him, because he's so, I guess you would say, a stoic on the sidelines.
Yeah.
But like he took the Lions to the playoffs, and like it's pretty crazy. Like Jim Caldwell had two straight winning seasons with the Lions, and then got fired. Like that's kind of absurd.
Yeah, he got fired when they went 9-7, which for the Lions is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's basically winning the Super Bowl for the Lions, and he did it 2 years in a row, and they're like, that's not good enough, and then they went and were terrible until this past year. He feels like his reputation's good, it's just boring, and like this is sports, I want them to be fun. I want to kind of talk a little bit about Steve Wilkes, and I talked about it a little in my kind of like quick look at him. Like, I feel like he did a really, really good job this year. And he definitely, like, I feel like he deserves some sort of chance to be a head coach. But, like, my concern is, along with, like, similar to Jim Caldwell, was, like, how, you know, old school we were. Like, how we ran. Like I said, like, the Saints game, we ran the ball almost three times as often as we threw it. And, like, that's fine when you have, like, a really healthy offensive line. And, like, you're playing a rather favorable schedule, but that's not, like, a sustainable way to be a contender, generally speaking. And it's, like, does Steve Wilkes, is that his, like, ideal image of a team, or was that out of necessity because of the quarterback situation here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was my thing as well. Then I know his style very much resembled the Ron Rivera conservative style, but at the same time, this team was kind of built to do that. Like Matt Rhule built a team where he built an offensive line that was very much structured to be a power rushing offense. Obviously they didn't really address, they tried to address the quarterback position, but it was very much just, you know, the cast offs for the most part.
Right.
And he ran a lot of really conservative zone defense, but at the same time he had J.C. Horn, obviously really good, and J.C. Horn excelled in that defense, but then he had to deal with C.J. Henderson and Keith Taylor. He didn't really get Dante Jackson a whole lot because Dante got himself hurt pretty early in the season. So that's my curiosity, is was it him just utilizing the strengths of the team, or was it his general philosophy? And that's what I'd really like to see. And I think that if they do hire Steve Wilkes as the head coach, I think whoever he picks as offensive coordinator will be very telling of what his philosophy really is.
Right. Like that would be, and that's one of those things that where it's hard for us to actually say with any sort of confidence, like how good of a candidate someone is. Right. Because like, if I'm interviewing him going forward, it's like, all right, this is what you did this year. What is like, do you intend to like, try to, is like, is this how you would prefer your football team to look, or was this you trying adapting to your personnel and knowing that this is not like maybe an ideal way to like approach the NFL in 2023, but this is the best we can do? Or is this what you intended to do no matter what? Right. And the way he kind of discusses that, I think is it goes a long way. Cause if he's like, nah, this is what I want. Like, I think if you want to be a successful team, you got to run the ball excessively and never throw unless you absolutely have to. And they were like, all right, well, I would want to hear him say, if I'm interviewing him, like, you know, like, this is a quarterback driven league, we want a team built around our quarterback, and just the way this roster was constructed, we didn't trust the quarterback play, and so we thought the only way we had any chance of winning was leaning on the run game, even if that doesn't gonna, you know, that has a ceiling that is lower than we want to be long term.
Right. And The other question there is, what are you going to do with a rookie quarterback? Because honestly, the strategy they employed, especially towards the end of the season, once they really started to find their footing as far as an offensive identity, like that would fit a rookie quarterback, especially one like Will Levis, for example. So I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to the more run-heavy style, especially since that's kind of how the offense is now currently constructed, and obviously being a coach, you need to use your you need to utilize your team and especially your offense in a way that caters to the strengths they have. So I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to him being the head coach with a rookie quarterback, especially year one. My concern would be year two and year three, once you've started assembling weapons around him. Are you going to keep him on a leash like you did with Sam Darnold? Which I will say, just to give them props, they let Sam Darnold fucking like rocket the ball sometimes. Like they did let him take those deep shots. So that was very promising. But is it going to be the same style of offense in year two or year three with a rookie quarterback when you just invested high draft capital in them? Because I would hope in this situation, it's one of the top two quarterbacks or even Will Levis, where you're banking that your franchise will succeed around him.
Right. Like you loosen the reins as the quarterback gets more experience, assuming the quarterback develop, you'd like, can you develop the quarterback? And then like, are you going to trust them to be your franchise, or are you going to try to keep them under like in bubble wrap perpetually? You know, like it's 1998.
Right. Like when they face a team like the Dallas Cowboys, running Deontay Foreman up the middle, you know, 30 times, or a combination of him and Chuba Hubbard, is probably not going to work because they might score like 28 points on you. So,
right,
how are you going to react to that? So,
yeah, because like that's part of the late season success is like, other than the Lions, like the schedule's pretty easy.
Yeah,
you know, like it we weren't the Panthers didn't play. But like other like I said, the Lions was like kind of the outlier here. But other than that, they played nobody that they had to play like outscore, right? And part of that was the defense being good, but like the games were always with any sort of decent defensive performance were going to be kept close enough that you could try to play that ball control style of offense. Like, what do you do when you have like the Chiefs on the schedule, or if like the, you know, our division's bad now, but you can't just be like, well, you know, our, if we just want to win our division, we just have to like be less terrible than the rest. But like, they're not going to be terrible forever. Like, you have to
The Saints went out and beat the Eagles, even with Gardner Minshew, who I don't think is a bad quarterback. Their team was for the most part healthy, and the Saints beat the shit out of the Eagles. Like they dominated them through the first half. Like, you know, that it's not like these teams are all, you know, going to need like 2 or 3 year rebuilds. They could be very much competitive next year.
Yeah, it's all just kind of quarterback problems. With that, like the other list though, like I feel like the conducted list is like kind of boring, and then the reported list is like the fun people, right? Ken Dorsey doesn't excite me all that much, maybe just because he's already been here, and I don't know.
I actually think he'd be a great pick.
I just don't know enough about him. And then, like I said, I like that he's a Brian Daboll like understudy, because I thought Brian Daboll was, I was kind of sad that we missed out on that kind of window that didn't overlap, because I was, would have loved to have him as a head coach. But, you know, if he can kind of do the same thing that Dable's done, that's cool. I don't know. Maybe it's just like his appearance and stuff. I don't know. But the other names, like the Ben Johnson and Mike Kafka, like the success that they've had, like with less than stellar pieces, like you said, with Ben Johnson and having Jared Goff becoming like a, like looking like he deserved to be the number one pick finally, and then Mike Kafka like figuring out how to make Daniel Jones look not terrible, like that just kind of creativity or like adaptability is kind of what I'm excited about. And then I think I don't know anything about Jared Mayo, but I think D'Amico Ryans has kind of shown a similar ability on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't mind it. I don't mind necessarily. Like, I don't think I don't want to automatically disqualify a defensive coach because they coach defense. It's more about the way they handle, like, football.
No, I mean, D'Amico Ryans seems like a really good motivator, and that's going to be that's a huge deal. I mean, we saw it with Steve Wilks. He was a huge motivator with the exact same team Matt Rhule had, and he got him to 6-6, where Matt Rhule won one game. So that is a huge factor into what you're getting from your head coach.
Head coaches, it's like a big part of it. Like you talked about with Steve Wilks, it's just like who their coordinators are and stuff, right? Like being a head coach is about like motivating your guys and organizing your team, and then like creating an image that you want your team to like implement, and then you have to hire the right people to kind of help execute it, right? Like the offense, the coach isn't like generally drawing up the defense, like scheming all the defensive stuff and scheming all the offensive stuff and doing all that stuff on his own. Like you can hire, you know, a defensive experienced guy, and if he brings in, he's like, all right, this is how I want our offense to run, and he hires an offensive coordinator that can implement that. Like that's kind of what you want.
No, I mean, to give Ron Rivera some props. I mean, he did that with Sean McDermott. I feel like he very much let Sean McDermott do his thing, and right. Steve Wilkes, he very much let him do his thing. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely merit to that argument. I think the thing with Ken Dorsey that appeals to me is just that he's very familiar with the organization and the area and the fans already. And he helped develop, he was the quarterback's coach for Cam Newton when Cam Newton was blowing the doors off the league. He was the quarterback's coach for Josh Allen, developed him into another quarterback who was blowing the doors off the league. So he's doing something right.
Yeah, he does have the quarterback development resume that if the Panthers draft a quarterback or intend to get a draft quarterback, that looks good.
Like, if you're going to trade for Derek Carr, like I was suggesting potentially earlier, maybe not Ken Dorsey, because Ken Dorsey doesn't really have any familiarity with Derek Carr, and I very much feel like if you're going to bring Derek Carr in, you bring somebody in who has a little familiarity with him, or at least the schemes he's comfortable with. But if you're going to draft a quarterback, I think Ken Dorsey's a great candidate.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Just that he can put his, like, you know, his pet project, like, you know, his job as a head coach is like, hey, offensive coordinator, hey, defensive coordinator, like, you do the big picture stuff, and then, like, I'm going to have a lot of wisdom to share with how to develop this young guy and contribute a lot to that side of the you know, the ball and how it works, right?
Right. The head coach just needs to make sure they're prepared.
Yep.
Which is something Matt Rhule struggled to do, and Steve Wilkes at times did well, and then also struggled to do at times. So,
yeah, which is not his fault necessarily either, because, like, I think what's so hard about being an interim head coach, like, you do get the benefit of having kind of a bump in player motivation because, you know, they've just, you know, it puts everybody on edge when, like, someone gets fired. They're like, oh, dang, like, my job's not safe anymore either. Which I think is why teams seem to have that little bump when the interim coach comes in. More so than, like, the interim coach themselves doing anything other than, like, a renewed focus that happens when someone gets let go. But when you're an interim head coach, I think it's like, well, you kind of have to stay within somewhat of a structure of what started because, like, you know, you don't have time to, like, go fully implement things the way you want because it's the middle of the season and you have games every week and you have 3 practices a week. And it's like, we can make some changes, but we can't go, like, this is my team, we're doing it my way. You know what I mean? So
no, you very much kind of have to, that. Yeah, you very much kind of have to adhere to the same structure as the head coach before you.
Yeah.
Even with your own little tweaks, but you're still, you can't implement a full game plan,
like scheme change.
Yeah, exactly. Like a full scheme change. Like, you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of have to run with it on the fly. And that's why I was very impressed with Steve Wilkes. He did kind of revert to some Ron Rivera tendencies, but I don't think they're necessarily terrible as long as you can then, I don't know, capitalize on the opportunities you're given instead of punting at the 36-yard line, for example. Like, go for it on fourth down. And I think Steve Wilkes very much did a good job with the pieces he had. And it's going to be interesting because whatever head coach comes in, they're going to have a nice skeleton of certain pieces, but they also really need to formulate a game plan and a scheme around what they have, because that's kind of what the Panthers are at this point. They are very good in certain areas, but they also are going to struggle in other areas. Like, their defense, for the most part, aside from guys like Frankie Louvu and Derek Brown, are very much not geared for teams that are going to run the ball a lot on them. So what are you going to do to combat that?
Right. Yeah. I think there's a good backbone because the lines are decent. Like, the offensive line's very good, even if I don't know how long you can rely on the current offensive line, just because that position feels like it, you know, players get hurt so much that he can fall off a cliff all, like, like over the course of one season. Right. But you know, the they have solid foundations on both sides of the line. So it's like, that's a good starting point. And then you can kind of build out, you know, like how do we want to kind of do the sliding scale of like speed versus size versus strength versus, you know, versatility type of thing.
Yeah.
There's, I think there's a good foundation there. And then there's room to make, to put that, build the team in the coach's image.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt Rhule's biggest failing for me on the defense was making them a little too speedy.
Yeah.
I think if they can find themselves a nice edge rusher, whether it's a free agency signing or a high draft pick to complement Brian Burns, then they'll be fine. Cause you know, Frankie Luvu can kind of fill in wherever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
Luckily they have him for another year, which is, that was probably the signing of Matt Rhule's career. The fact that they got him on a 2-year deal, because there's no way that if it was a 1-year deal, he'd be back with the Panthers. He'd be getting a giant contract from somebody else at this point.
I mean, we do need to try to extend him, I think. Mm-hmm. Like this coming off season before.
That would be smart.
While they out of control.
Especially if Shaq Thompson's leaving. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck they're going to do with him, because he's making like $24 million this year.
Yeah, I don't think very many people foresaw a world where like Shaq Thompson is an afterthought and Frankie Luvu is like the star of the defense, of the middle of the defense. But that's where we are now.
Yep.
I don't really know anything about Shane Steichen from Philadelphia other than like their offense is pretty good, but you know, I don't know anything about him. I've never seen him talk or anything. The last thing I wanted to kind of just mention is like, I really, really want Steve Wilks to get a head coach job because I hate the hand that he's been dealt in his coaching career. But it's just kind of like, and I wouldn't be mad if we hired him, but it's just like, I wouldn't handpick him. So I feel kind of bad. I'm like very conflicted about that, like internally.
It would just very much go against what David Tepper seems to be looking for. Because I don't think they're going to score a high-end offensive coordinator once they get Steve Wilks. I very much feel like the offensive coordinator position is basically going to be dictated by what head coach they hire. Mm-hmm. And Steve Wilks is very good, and I agree. I wouldn't be mad if they get him, but I just don't know who the hell they'd hire to be offensive coordinator if Steve Wilks retains the job.
Right.
So
I was looking at his history, you know, his bio when I was writing the thing, and it was like, you know, he bounced around a lot, and then he was with the Panthers as he got hired as a secondary coach, then he was like secondary coach with the assistant coach title and that. And then I think we talked about it before at some point, and I know it's been talked about a lot, but he got 1 year with the Cardinals with Josh Rosen and Sam Bradford as his quarterbacks, and then they got wooed by the shiny toy of Cliff Kingsbury. So he got 1 year with the Cardinals. He went to the Browns, got 1 year with the Browns, and then they got that coaching staff. Like, they cleaned house because it was Freddie Kitchens' year.
Yep.
And then, you know, then he had to go to Missouri, and then he comes to Carolina, and then he gets thrust into, like, the Matt Rhule regime where they're getting cleaned out, and he had to get, you know, inherited a team that was like a total dumpster fire. And he's done, like, I feel like he's done well with his opportunities. It's just, like, he keeps ending up in really bad opportunities. And so I feel like he's done his part to earn a job, and I just feel like even this situation hasn't like set him up for success.
No, it very much hasn't. Yeah. I kind of think the ideal situation is get a guy like Frank Reich and give Steve Wilks the defensive coordinator position again. That would be really good. But yeah. I don't know if that's going to be the case, because maybe Steve Wilks interviews for other head coaching spots in the league and potentially gets one. So they have an asset on their hands, though, with him. Like, he's not someone I would want to let go lightly.
Right. Cardinals should hire him again.
That would be hilarious. And also, I know he's not taking the job, so.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I would not, but, if I were him.
No. But anyway, is there anything else you'd like to cover before we end this podcast and get on to the next one? In a few weeks or this or next week or
whenever. I mean, yeah, there's probably going to be news at some point soon. Like, we're going to hire somebody before too long.
Oh yeah, definitely. So,
but now I think think that covered everything. It's a very interesting. The one good thing about like being a terrible team is like it makes the offseason fun, right? Because we're gonna have a new quarterback next year, and we're gonna have a new coach next year, and maybe, and it's like that's always exciting.
Yes, it is always very exciting because it means you can win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And your fans can't hate on them until they've officially fielded a team in the regular season. So it's all up from here.
Right. Yeah, we can't hate on a new offensive coordinator until the first time they go 3-and-out, and then we can hate them for being terrible.
Right. Exactly. So, well, from all of us here at the Keep Sounding Podcast, this is Brian joined by John as always. We will be in touch and we will give you all the coverage of the head coaching search as it comes along. Stay tuned for articles on the Panthers, or excuse me, on the Cat Scratch Reader to break down the head coaching candidates we've been looking at. We've already broken down a few and there will be more to come. So stay tuned, stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you soon.
See ya.